Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
You're listening to The Pet Doctor on PetLifeRadio.com. I'm your host, Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Science has shown that a pet's nervous system is very similar to ours. So why is it that when we're in pain, everybody around us knows it, but when our dogs and cats are, rarely do they declare their discomfort? Dr. Stephen Fox of Novartis Animal Health will help us understand the signs of a pet in pain and discuss new ways that a veterinarian has to relieve them. Since it is the beginning of the year, 2008, we're all making our own resolutions. While some resolutions that we should make for our pets can really make sure that they enjoy the best year possible. So some resolutions that you may want to keep in mind for 2008 for your pet is to take your pet to the veterinarian at least twice a year. It seems kind of crazy why twice a year, but since one of our years is about seven of theirs, a lot can change in a short amount of time. You also want to keep your pets up to date on vaccines. Don't fall into the myth that, my pet never leaves the home and doesn't need its vaccines. They still do. They can pick up diseases at their grooming facility or sometimes just even going for a walk around the block. Stay on top of their dental care. It's very important. Bad teeth are just not a source of bad smell. It can also be a source of infection for the entire body. You'll also want to take parasite control seriously, both internal as well as external. Fleas and ticks can be a year-round component of your pet's life. They can stay in the house even in the midst of winter. You'll also want to keep track of your pet's medical history. It doesn't have to be something fancy. Keep yourself a little notebook. Keep track of what's going on with your pet's life. So when you go into your veterinarian and your veterinarian's asking you, "So, how's that pet been doing at home?" You can whip out that little book and you can answer, because otherwise we tend to forget. Keep medications on hand that are supposed to be given on a daily basis. And when given a medication by your veterinarian, when it says give till gone, do so. There is a reason why you want to do it. What else can you do to keep your pet in good health for 2008? Keep it thin. We know that chubby pets are at risk for just a myriad of diseases. We know that it also shortens their life about 2 years. So chubby is not necessarily happy. These ideas and more can be found on a great website, Dr. Phil Zeltman. He is a veterinarian, a board-certified surgeon that puts out a great newsletter that comes out on a weekly basis. You can access this by going to drphilzeltman.com. Dr. P-H-I-L, Z as in zebra, E-L-T-Z-M-A-N.com. Or just check on our website and you can get the address there. So we'll be right back after a few words from our sponsors and we'll be talking about pets in pain. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
That's it. You're madder than a junkyard dog, and you're not going to take it anymore. Your feathers are ruffled, your dander is up, and you've got a definite bone to pick. Join us each week on Pet Peeves, the show that lets you dig through the dirt and unleash your passion for pets. Your host, pet expert, and award-winning author, Amy Shojai, will talk about what makes you howl and what hisses you off. Pet Peeves, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggy's duffel bag, and that's Fido-Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city and state reviews, and doggy destinations to explore with your furry companion. Fido-Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Pet Boutiques, and Fido-Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.fidofriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Fido Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
It's time to start scratching for donations for the Humane Society of Broward County's Walk for the Animals, presented by VCA Animal Hospitals. The walk is Saturday, March 1st at Esplanade Park in downtown Fort Lauderdale. You'll need a registration form, so stop by any VCA Animal Hospital, IHOP, the Museum of Discovery and Science, or the Humane Society. This event is also brought to you by Big 105.9, Comcast, Purina One,
PetLifeRadio.com,
Tidy Cats, and the Herald. Call 954-266-6817 or log on to walk4theanimals.com for more details. See you there.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
My guest today is Dr. Stephen Fox of Novartis Animal Health. And Dr. Fox, I know that pets are wired basically the same way that people are. So why don't they show pain?
Well, they do. I think that it's difficult for us oftentimes to interpret what they're telling us. It's interesting that in man, pain is what the patient says it is, where in animals, pain is what the assessor says it is. And so some of us are much better at taking the cues that the animals are giving us than are other, but by and large, that they are expressing pain in some. And usually, it's a change from normal. And that is usually the most common indication that an animal is in pain. And, of course, that is perceived more frequently and more accurately by the owner than is the veterinarian. The veterinarian, as you know, Bernadine, is very good at the technical aspects, but they don't know the idiosyncrasies of that particular pet and what is a little bit abnormal for that pet. And it's the pet owner that can give the insight to the veterinarian to fill that total picture.
You're so right, Dr. Fox, because so many times when an animal comes into the veterinary hospital, you know, says, well, really, doc, it was doing this at home, but it's not doing it here. And my usual response is it's somewhat like the car that you take to the mechanic or the child you take to the pediatrician. It never makes a noise. It never seems to have the problem. And yes, the pet owner knows that animal so well. What are some of the common ways that a pet owner will notice that something is different, that their pet may be in pain?
Well, of course, any kind of behavioral, some of the most severe being that when you handle them, that they become somewhat aggressive and they might want to bite, that's kind of at the far end. But there can be other subtle things like the animal's reluctance to eat, or particularly with osteoarthritis. Reluctance to, say, jump up on a sofa or a bed or a couch, or posturing to toilet sometimes is painful with animals that have joint anomalies associated with osteoarthritis. So it's a change from the normal that you see that should alarm you that something is not quite right.
Do cats display pain differently than dogs?
Well, they do. And, you know, diagnosing lethargy in a cat is kind of like the old when is yogurt sour, because cats tend to be very quiet and reserved, except, of course, they're nocturnal and they like to move around a lot. My three cats move a lot in nighttime. But,
right when you're trying to go to sleep.
That's right. That's right. And whereas dogs oftentimes, and we use this as a cue oftentimes with osteoarthritis, they don't feel well, and therefore maybe they are eating a lot and not exercising much, and therefore they may be putting on weight. Now, in contrast, oftentimes you might see a weight loss in cats because frequently we'll put their food up on an elevated surface, kind of like a washing machine or dryer or something like that. And because they're painful, they won't jump up and eat as frequently. And so where in the dog we might see an increase in weight that is a cue, particularly for osteoarthritis, in the cat we see exactly the opposite. And it makes sense when you think about what the cause and effect is, but you wouldn't think that they would be so divergent. But oftentimes it's because of the way that we rear or keep the animals.
I have to admit that I had an old boy kitty myself, Zachary, and the first time I realized that he was having some problems himself was osteoarthritis, is one evening he'd always jump on the bed to sleep with me, and this one evening he was scratching on the side of the bed covers, and I looked over the edge and said, come on, jump on up. And then I realized he couldn't, because you're right, cats disguise their signs of discomfort so well. I guess it somewhat goes back to survival of the fittest. If you look weak out in the environment, you're going to be the first one picked off by the hunter.
That's right. And again, particularly, well, depending on how affectionate, if you will, you are with your pet, oftentimes dogs, I know my dogs, I have two golden retrievers, when they are not feeling well, they tend to come to me for some kind of a comfort, whereas cats tend to be more solitary and they tend to want to be kind of unto themselves, and so they'll kind of go off in a corner or hide under something or like to be in a box or some place where they can be secluded. So they do show marked difference, one species to the other.
Pain management right now really seems to be a hot topic in veterinary medicine. Why wasn't it really addressed in the profession, say, 10, 15 years ago? I know when I graduated from veterinary school, they always said, well, it's okay for them to have a little bit of pain, especially, for instance, after they've had surgery. We don't want them to move around too much. We want them to be a little painful so they'll stay quiet. Why have things changed?
Well, there's lots of explanations for that, Bernadine, principle to which is our increased knowledge base. You know, to that point, it was only about 20 years ago that they were doing open heart surgery on infants, babies, and they were not giving them pain management at all, because at that time the mindset was that they didn't believe that babies actually, particularly at that age, actually felt pain. Well, we know different now. We've come a long way in our understanding of animal physiology. And interestingly enough, many of our species, as you said at the intro, are very, very similar. So we can kind of talk about pain as one science that transcends a lot of different animals and species. But we also have better pharmaceutical agents available to us. We have better drugs. We know how they work. We have a better understanding of how to apply them. And so whereas for the example you gave, it used to be the mandate that we would let animals feel a little bit of pain because it was good. It would impede their activity, particularly in the orthopedic setting, where maybe then they wouldn't distract a fracture. Well, now that's very poorly accepted in veterinary medicine. We have come to implement internal fixation. The whole concept is to get the animal moving earlier so that we can get more muscle activity and increased blood flow and therefore faster healing. And so now we have medication, we have understanding to keep those animals pain-free so that indeed they can enhance their recovery time frame.
Besides the obvious that pain hurts, what are some of the adverse side effects to the whole body when a pet's in pain?
Boy, there's almost no end of unrolling those. The pain can affect the endocrine system. It can affect a lot of our physiology. And so it can affect blood pressure, our immunological response to other problems. We can have, of course, change in heart rates and respiratory rates. To kind of summarize, it's a whole body concept, and the consequences of pain are very far-reaching. And we now know that our central nervous system, our very, very complex central nervous system, can transition into a state of chronic pain that can be self-perpetuating. And so we used to think that the nervous system was hardwired, like a light switch. You flip the switch, the light comes on. How easy is that? But in fact, the central nervous system is more like a smart computer, where you have an input that goes through the computer, there are a lot of changes that occur, and the output changes. And so it is that once you get into a state of chronic pain, it can be self-perpetuating, and it can be extremely difficult to treat. And so that gives us all the more reason why we should treat pain early and effectively so that we don't get into that chronic pain state.
If a person doesn't believe that their pet is in pain, and that's a situation I run into so frequently in my office, owner comes in with a pet. It obviously is a older pet who's having a hard time getting up and down. I said, you know, your pet looks like it's in pain. Oh, no, it's not in pain. It's not saying anything. It's not doing anything. How do you convince that person that, yes, your pet's in pain?
Well, we go back to kind of an analogy you made earlier, which is in the past, we really didn't treat pain effectively. And why was it? Well, because we didn't have the knowledge base. We now are smarter, and to your point, I practiced referral orthopedic surgery for 15 years, and similar to your observation, I would have a pet owner come in with a dog that's only using three legs, and I'd say, boy, your dog is obviously very painful. In response, they would say, oh, I don't think he's painful, and then I would say, well, then why don't you think he's using his leg? If he's not painful, he would be using his leg. And so I think that oftentimes the lay public associates pain only with vocalization. And they tend to think that the dog is, or the animal is only painful if they're howling or barking or screaming or something like that. And in fact, they have far more sophisticated expressions of their discomfort than just that verbalization. And going back to lameness, usually an animal is lame for only one of two reasons. One is either it cannot move a limb or it refuses to use a limb. And it may refuse to use a limb because of pain. On the other hand, it may not be able to use a limb because it may have some musculoskeletal anomaly like a muscle contracture or a contracted tendon or joint capsule or something. So therefore, you need to kind of look at, well, is it not using the limb because it's painful, or is it not using the limb because it can't, or is it a combination of those two, and then approach it that way. And that's the way that most veterinarians approach lamenesses.
One of the things I am so happy with since I've been a veterinarian now for over 20 years is there is now so many different pain medications, ways that I can treat pain for cats as well as dogs. And I know clients are always wondering, oh, they see this new medication that's come out for dogs or a cat and going, huh, is this just really a medication that they tried to use for people and it kind of washed out, it didn't make it through FDA, so now we're using it on animals. Could you address that?
Well, in some cases that's true. When you look at the pharmaceutical industry, particularly if you're a stockholder, you'd appreciate that the biggest return on research investments, and incidentally, to bring a drug to market takes about 12 to 15 years and costs somewhere in the vicinity of $75 to $100 million. So it's not a trivial pursuit to discover and bring to market a new drug. Oftentimes, when pharmaceutical companies do that, they are focusing on the biggest return, which is human use. And in that process, they'll start using that drug in rodents, mice and rats, and then they'll progress to, say, dogs or cats or monkeys, and then to man and so forth. And oftentimes, they'll find that some of those products don't work as well or have some adverse side effect in a particular species but not another. Consequently, you may find that you have a very good molecule, but it just happens to be not real good for people for whatever reason, but it showed excellent results with no toxicity or minimal toxicity in, say, a cat or a dog. In that case, then it's the ideal product for that particular species. It's not very often that major pharmaceutical companies strive to find a specific product for a pet, although that does occur. The important thing is that when you use a product, you should ensure that it has an FDA label for use in that particular species. And therein lies some problems. I think oftentimes pet owners will say, well, my dog, for example, may have a lameness or something. I'll just give it an aspirin. Incidentally, aspirin is not approved for use in dogs. and it can be quite dangerous. So for those
That's medication that veterinarians have been using for so many years, and I'm glad you brought it up because so many times people say, oh, my vet, you know, from 30 years ago used to recommend aspirin, so why can't I give it? What's wrong with it?
Well, and to that point, they may not have been wrong in using it, but again, I go back to my earlier point, which is we now have better products, safer products. We know more about aspirin than we ever did. And, of course, years ago, we used what was available to us because that was all of it that was available to us. Now we have much better products that have gone through greater screens, if you will, for their efficacy, how well they work, and how safe they are. And we have much, much better choices. And we also now know, and this has only been revealed within, say, the last 5 to 7 years, that aspirin can be problematic to both people and pets. As a matter of fact, the American Medical Association cites that in the year 2000, 15,600 people died from toxicity from aspirin and aspirin-like products. So they're not necessarily benign. And if you're going to reach for those kinds of products, you should always check with your veterinarian first to see that they condone in that particular dog that it's the appropriate product as a first choice.
Can it make a difference? We're talking about aspirin, for instance. We used to use it in dogs. We now know that there's safer alternatives. Can there be a difference in way dogs will react from one pain medication to another dog in the same family? For instance, can we use one medication? Oh, I have a Labrador at home who's lame, and now its friend at home who's a golden retriever also has a lameness. Can I safely use one medication on the other?
Possibly. I think as a population, as we look at dogs in general, there are comparative studies that have shown that some products have better efficacy and possible safety than others in the whole population of dogs. Now, that's taken, again, a population of dogs. But just like you and me, there would be differences in our response to different drugs. For example, I might have some kind of painful anomaly, and I get a better response from, say, ibuprofen than I do from, say, Naprosyn, Aleve. On the other hand, you may find exactly the contrary. You may find that the best product for you is, say, Aleve rather than ibuprofen, a Naprosyn. So there is great difference from animal to animal, despite the fact that they're the same species and may even be the same breed. So I think one might take their initial clue from studies that show in the population how they respond to a particular drug. And then if that particular animal does not respond as you would expect, then you might want to transition or switch to a different one to see if, in fact, there is a bit of idiosyncratic difference between the two individuals.
Well, you've been listening to Dr. Stephen Fox of Novartis Animal Health. I'm Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and this is The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. We're going to take a short break and come back and talk about dogs in particular, one of the most common reasons for them to experience pain, too frequently not being treated for it, and that's arthritis. We'll be right back after this break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Want to know what cats like to eat for breakfast? Mice Krispies, of course. Learn everything there is to know about cats on Catitude with your host, Tom Doc. Each week, we'll spotlight a cool cat breed, give up-to-date advice on cat health, and check out spiffy new cat products. So curl up on the couch every week for a perfectly enjoyable time on Catitude. Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet, For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
We're speaking right now with Dr. Stephen Fox. And Dr. Fox, thank you so much for telling us about how people can recognize their pets in pain. But I do know that about 1 in 5 adult dogs suffer with osteoarthritis, and less than half of them are being treated, many times because people don't realize that dog has a problem. What are some of the signs that a person can recognize, look for, if they think their pet may have arthritis?
Well, there are some risk factors that would come into play here. Of course, those are rather obvious. Osteoarthritis tends to be more prevalent in older dogs. It tends to be more prevalent in dogs that are overweight. And there tends to be a little overrepresentation in females compared to males. So once again, if you see that your dog is slowing down or is showing some of the indications we mentioned earlier, discomfort when it postures to toilet, or reluctance to jump up on things, or would rather sit than stand, and just basically slow down and less interested. So those are some of the basic cues that you might have. Now, when one says, how can I really ensure that my animal is painful? What are the scales, or how can I rank it, or how can I actually judge that that's the case? Well, one, of course, again, is change from normal, but the cardinal sign of whether an animal is pain is whether or not it responds to a pain reliever. And therefore, if you think that your animal is slowing down because of some disease anomaly like osteoarthritis, take them for a test drive with some of these newer products and see if, in fact, they are improved. I think commonly pet owners will tend to say, well, my dog's just old and therefore it slows down. But I can tell you as an aging American, I'm getting older, and I'd like to think that I'm not slowing down. So I don't think that age is a disease. And so if you're having that slowing down in your pet, then consult with your veterinarian to see if it's more than just so-called old age, that they might have an underlying osteoarthritis, because it is, as you mentioned, quite common, about 1 in 4.
What are some of the treatments that are now available? Because I totally agree with you. I'll have clients come in who say that the pet's not painful. I'll put them on a week's trial. So just humor me. Try one of the things I'll use most commonly are the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. And after a week's time, you tell me if the dog is better or not. And the majority of the time, they go, oh my goodness, I didn't realize that it was uncomfortable. So besides the non-steroidals, what else is there for people to use for their pets in pain?
We have at Novartis within the last year put out a very informative interactive CD, and we put a lot of literature out addressing the concept of multimodal approach to osteoarthritis. Multimodal being the term given when we put a cocktail together. To treat the animal, or different modalities to treat the animal. So our approach is, one, if you could envision a triangle with three corners, one corner being these non-steroidals, as you mentioned, and that there are a variety of good ones on the market now for pets. Another corner of that would be chondroprotectants. These are usually injectables. Ataquin is an excellent example of that. The third corner would be adjunctive drugs. These are many of the drugs that are being used in human medicine for chronic pain, such as amantadine, gabapentin, tramadol, and so forth. And then if you overlie that triangle with another triangle that's inverted, one corner being exercise and weight management, another corner of that being these new omega-3 fatty acid diets that many of the pet food industries have on the market, and then the final corner being a physical rehabilitation, and that would include things as simple as leash walking to things that are more complex, such as underwater treadmill activity. So here you have six very specific areas, all of which independently can make a difference. But if they're implemented collectively, it can be very, very powerful. And one of the great attributes of using a multimodal approach is that then the component that is the drug can be administered at the very, very, very lowest dose and therefore have minimal potential for side effects. So I think most people in the know these days would be very strong proponents of multimodal management of osteoarthritis.
Dr. Fox, something you didn't mention, I know people use it for themselves, they use it for their cats and dogs, is going to be things like glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate. Does that really make a difference once a pet has the arthritis?
It can. However, the science is very weak. This has been an area of contentious discussion for many, many years. And if you search the human literature, there are very, very few studies that actually show a positive response. One such study was funded by the National Institute of Health, published in the New England Journal of Medicine only about a year and a half ago. A very rigorous study, I think 14 different institutions, $18 million study, that actually showed there was no effect of glucosamine, no effect of chondroitin. Put collectively the two together, there was a response. However, in that study, the only group that responded to the two together showed no response to the very powerful drug Celebrex. So the end result of that study was, you could say inconclusive, but the scientific community, by and large, says it shows that they did not do anything. Now, my personal opinion is that these products can make a positive impact on some animals, but the science is rather weak, and the short side of this is that it is an arena open for charlatans in that there is virtually nobody regulating this area of nutraceuticals. They don't have to be sanctioned by the FDA. So if you and I, Bernadine, want to sweep the floor of our shed and put it in a jar and sell it as a nutraceutical, virtually there's nobody that can prevent us from doing that. And therefore, if you feel that you would like to use a nutraceutical, find one that the research data has shown to be very favorable and use that product at that dose and it has, in fact, quality assurance assuring that what is in that jar is what the label says is in the jar. And so it is, regrettably, an area of buyer beware, and it has relatively thin science compared to the drugs. Those are not truly drugs. A nutraceutical is defined as a product that's given orally to try to enhance the well-being of the animal. It's not classified as a drug.
Now, Dr. Fox, I know that you work for Novartis Animal Health, and they don't produce pet food. But many of the pet foods now, and this goes along with your buyer beware, are being touted as being joint diets. Do you have a feeling about those?
I do. I think that there are some, at the risk of naming products here, I know, for example, that Hill's JD, the Iams Senior Plus, the JM from Purina, these are all diets that are focused on what's called EPA. That's a very long-term eicosapentaenoic acid that is derived from both omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. That is the active agent in these diets. They enhance the integrity of the cartilage, and they prevent enzymes from the disease process that degrade the cartilage. So the science is very strong in those diets. However, they also, almost all of them, contain a glucosamine and a chondroitin. And it's my personal opinion that those are in there for marketing. There is no data that has supported the efficacy or the usefulness of those components. It's the EPA in those diets that you should be looking for.
So they may not hurt the glucosamine, but they may not help, but it helps the owner feel better about pulling it off the shelf and feeding it to their pet. In your multimodal diagram of the six various areas, one of those points of the triangle being the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. I know people oftentimes are very concerned about using any medication for long-term use. And we know with arthritis, it's not going to be cured. We're just going to control the signs. Are NSAIDs really safe for long-term use?
I would say that they are, although I think that there is a risk-benefit for any drug put in any animal, ourselves included. for that reason, if you're going to have your pet on a long-term therapy with NSAIDs, or this would apply to yourself, you and me, you should be routinely going to your physician, in this case the veterinarian, to ensure that the animal is not having any underlying problems with it, such as liver or kidney function responses that would be adverse. And that's why it's important that if you have a dog on long-term, and many of these drugs that we're talking about, many of these NSAIDs, have been given to animals for as long as 8 to 10 years. I had a golden retriever that was on an NSAID for about 8 years without complications. So indeed they are, but it's important that you monitor the animal's response, because you see, you may have them on the drug, but the animal may change. Because as the animal gets older, its physiological systems, its kidneys, its liver, its GI tract is changing according to its increasing age, and therefore it may be changing in the way that it handles these drugs that are being administered.
What are some of the potential side effects that a person could see if their pet was on an NSAID, for instance?
Well, the most common side effect from NSAIDs, the adverse side effects, are exactly what we see in humans. They're associated with the GI or gastrointestinal tract. So most commonly one might see such things as vomiting or diarrhea, and that would be a first clue to, one, immediately discontinue administering the drug, and two, call your veterinarian to take a look and see if, in fact, they think that this is associated with the particular drug administration. The animal could have other anomalies, maybe a coronavirus is going through the neighborhood, or maybe it has a parvo exposure, or a variety of other things, maybe a diet change. So it's imperative that you get the assistance of the veterinarian. But I also think it's important to discontinue the drug at the first indication that you might see, and then get your advisement as soon as possible from your veterinarian.
Great idea. In general, what can a pet owner do working with their veterinarian to make sure that they benefit the most from an NSAID or any medical drug treatment that's being offered by the veterinarian?
Well, I think that I recall a time when I think at McDonald's, if they didn't serve you like within a certain period of time, you got a free order of fries or something. I go around the country advocating to veterinarians that any time that they prescribe a drug, that the owner should have addressed to them, what is this drug supposed to do? What is the appropriate dose and dosing interval? What would be potential side effects? And if I see a potential side effect, what should I do? Now, those 4 points should be answered for every single prescription that a pet owner has. And if your veterinary clinic, i.e. the veterinarian and or the staff, is not addressing those questions, you should ask them. You should ask those questions so that you have a confidence in what you're giving your pet and what is the safest way to administer it. I think that's always a good, and it's a good rule of thumb for us when we go to our physician to ask the same questions.
I think, yes, very definitely. Now, whenever you and I go to our pharmacies to pick up prescription, if it's a new prescription, seems like you're taken to the side. The pharmacist will say, okay, do you have any questions? This is how you take it, whether or not you can take it with food. And I think that's so important, because too many times you tell a person to give it, and I remember a client of mine, give it till gone. And in my mind, that meant until the product was gone, the medication was gone. And in their mind, it was until the signs were gone. So it's like, communication is so definitely important.
That's right. And for that reason, it's very helpful for veterinarians, for the veterinarians that are in your listening audience, that they not only give that information verbally to the pet owner, but also in writing. Because as you know, oftentimes people will come into the veterinarian and they have distractions as well. The dog is not behaving, or they have children with them that are distracting. And maybe they don't hear everything that you would like for them to hear. And therefore it's important that that information be availed to the pet owner, both in writing and verbally. And it's important maybe that you might even have that on your website.
I think it's a very good idea. Ask those questions. I know that there's various areas like computers that I am very challenged with. And I sometimes feel a little bit embarrassed to say, excuse me, could you explain that one more time? And I'm sure there are many times my own clients, you know, really don't understand. So ask questions are great. Will frequently at my own hospital call a day or so later. Hi, how are you doing? How's the pet doing? Any problems giving the medications? Are you seeing anything that's different going on that you didn't expect? So keep those lines of communications open. If people had more questions about arthritis and pain relief in particular. Dr. Fox, is there some place that you would recommend that they look on the internet, for instance?
Well, we at Novartis have a website. It's Pet Wellness, that's PetWellness.com, which talks about some of our products, which are focused for the well-being of animals. And we also have a very strong technical support group. So we have a group of about 25 veterinarians, and if you had a question, you could call our technical services group at Novartis, and we'd try to answer it as best we possibly can in the most scientific and evidence-based manner that we can. And I think that's true of most pharmaceutical, pet pharmaceutical companies, that they will try to help consumers, pet owners, learn as much as they possibly can about how to best manage their pet's illnesses.
Well, Dr. Stephen Fox of Novartis Animal Health, thank you so much for being with us today. You're listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz on The Pet Doctor on PetLifeRadio.com. If you have any questions regarding your pet's health, the best person to ask is your pet's personal doctor, your veterinarian. You can also ask me by contacting me at thepetdoctor@PetLifeRadio.com. Please check back next week when I'll address more of your issues concerning you and your pet's health. And remember, it's your pet. Health matters. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. On demand every week. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.